What is your full name?
Thomas D. Clark.
And where and when were you born?
I was born July the 14th, 1903, in Louisville, Mississippi. Same as Louisville, Kentucky.
But pronounced differently.
Pronounced differently.
Can you tell me a little bit about your parents? What was your father's full name and your mother's maiden name?
My father's name was John Collinsworth Clark. And my mother's name, Sally Bennett Clark. My father was born in 1876, and my mother in 1881. Mm-hmm. Both of them just after the Civil War. They had vivid memories of what people had told them and of what had gone on in the South.
What were some of those memories?
Oh, they remembered people talking about the battles. We had relatives who were in the Civil War. Mm-hmm. They remembered the freeing of the slaves, that is, stories of the freeing of the slaves, and of Reconstruction, mm-hmm. and a general reorganization and creation of the South.
Did their families have slaves?
Yes. The Clark family had a few slaves.
I wondered if they stayed with the family after Reconstruction. Did your parents
know
them?
Did, I know nothing about it. But I did know a lot of slaves. The slaves that had belonged to other families. Mm-hmm. There were some of them that lived on our place, or associated with our family. I knew them quite well. As a matter of fact, I knew two Congo slaves that had come over just before the outbreak of the Civil War. They were around. There was a woman lived on our place, Aunt Betsy Harper, who had been sold in slavery from Kentucky, had belonged to this famous Harper family. The distillers here in Kentucky. Mm. I knew a lot of ex-slaves.
Mm-hmm. What were they doing for a living?
They were tenant farmers.
Cotton
in the cotton fields. My people were cotton farmers. And they were tenants.
Do you think
worked cotton?
Tales of the Civil War and of what was going on before and after, do you think that influenced your interest in history?
It may have. It's hard to tell how you did develop an interest. My mother was a school teacher. I went to school to her until about the sixth grade, I guess, sixth or seventh grade.
This was in a formal school, not at home.
That's right. One-room school.
She taught.
She taught
sixth or eighth grades at once.
She taught from the elementary school, elementary grades, right up to the certainly not beyond the eighth grade.
What was her full name?
Sally Bennett Clark.
Right.
My people were of English origin. My Clark family.
Mm-hmm.
They came to Rhode Island and settled in Providence. The brother of my forebear was old Dr. John Clark, who was very influential in the organization of the Rhode Island plantations. As a matter of fact, he represented the Rhode Island plantations. That man had only one child, a daughter. His brother, my forebear, moved down to Virginia, down into the James River Valley. And I had three ancestors who were in the Battle of Yorktown at the surrender of Cornwallis. They lived at Prince Edward County, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And my immediate forebear, who was the younger of the three present, moved down to Anderson County, South Carolina. But that was just a momentary stop.
Mm-hmm.
he had four sons who went on out to that Choctaw Indian country in Mississippi in the 1834, and settled down at the headwaters of the Pearl River. And that's where my family has been ever since.
I see. What did your father do for a living?
He was a farmer, a cotton farmer.
I see.
A cotton farmer until the day of his death. He died in just short of his 80th birthday. He left a very fine field of cotton ready to be picked. As a matter of fact, I was in England at the time he died, and I had to go home and make arrangements to get that cotton picked, the last crop of cotton grown on that farm. And it was a good crop.
How long did your mother live?
My mother lived 20 years at least after that.
She died
at some time, I think, I'm not sure of the year, but approximately 1970.
How old was she about then?
She was, 96 years old at the time of her death.
What about brothers and sisters?
I have five brothers and sisters. Mm. One dead. The other, there are four living. I'm the older. Mm-hmm. I have one brother and lives in Denver, Colorado. One brother lives in McAllen, Texas. And two sisters in Mississippi.
So part of the family stayed in Mississippi.
My sisters.
I see. Do you remember anything about grandparents?
Surely. I don't remember my grandfather, Clark. He died the year I was born. But my grandmother, Clark, lived to be somewhere in the neighborhood 95 years of age. I remember her quite well. She was of what they called Dutch extraction. Her maiden name was Cato. But her people came from East Flat Rock, North Carolina, the little village that made famous by Carl Sandburg.
Yes.
They sold land to George Vanderbilt and moved out to Mississippi. Her father was a sort of a major figure in the little town. He gave land to the Baptist Church, which is still there. And he and my great-grandmother are buried inside of a little iron enclosure, which he made himself. He was a blacksmith. And when Grierson's raid took place through that town, went right by the door of his shop. He had a son who was a bugler for Nathan Bedford Forrest. And my Bennett family came from Charleston, South Carolina, and they followed the land frontier into the Pearl River country. But my great-grandmother, great-great-grandmother Bennett, died in Louisiana. They moved on across the Mississippi River.
Let's see.
Yeah, I obviously never knew
right.
them. But yes, I knew my grandfather Bennett quite well. He died when I was a senior in high school. He was a farmer and a very successful farmer.
Also a cotton farmer?
Yes.
What was your childhood?
Everybody in that community grew cotton.
What was your childhood like?
I had a happy childhood. It was rural. Rural childhood in which we didn't have a lot of material things. Very limited in that respect. But we had the whole wide open world in which to grow up in, mm-hmm. with creeks nearby where you could go fishing, swimming. Mm-hmm. We had neighbors of our age, and we enjoyed those associations. Well, I had a happy childhood.
You talked about going to your mother's school, being taught by her. What was school like, early schooling?
I have her certificates. I have her school records. and she was paid, as all Mississippi teachers were, or Kentucky teachers, paid a very low salary. The first school she taught, well, as a matter of fact, she taught the one-room school in my father's community. That's where she met my father. Oh. Right across the road from the big double log house that my South Carolina ancestor built. It was a Carolina-type house. She taught one-room school there and met my father. And then later, after we moved on to a second farm that we owned, she began teaching school on that farm. The schoolhouse was on the farm. And after that, she taught in two or three different locations. I was quite pleased when she lay a corpse. Some of her old students came to the funeral. Students that I'm certain, well, she never forgot anybody she would have known. I'd never heard of them. My mother was, she had college training. She'd gone to college.
Where did she go to school?
She went to a school called the Southern Female College at West Point, Mississippi. She was a woman with a keen memory and read. That, I think, had as much influence on me as anything. She read all the time and remembered what she read, too.
Did she read to you a lot when you were
young? She did, indeed. She did, indeed. I remember one time, I suppose if we had any image of Abraham Lincoln, it was the Black Abe image, coming up in that strong Confederate atmosphere. Mm-hmm. But I remember she read Mrs., I believe, E.D.E. and Southworth Ishmael. I hope I have the author and title correct. That had to do with Abraham Lincoln. It was just a thinly veiled biography of Lincoln. And I can remember quite vividly how interested we were in that story. Hmm. My grandfather had a fairly good library for a southern cotton farmer, and we had books. I came up in a home that had not a lot of books, but we had books in the home. My whole life, some way or other, I've been associated with books. I've been in an atmosphere where books were important.
What about in elementary school or high school? Do you remember reading or history emerging as a special interest for you then?
Yes. Certainly in high school, I was interested in history. I remember I went to a boarding school. In those days, Mississippi had only a limited number of high schools. And the legislature created a system of high schools called agricultural high schools, designed largely for the benefit of rural boys and girls. And those schools had associated with them dormitories where you could board very cheaply and go to school for a minimum expense. And I went to that kind of school. It had a small library. And coming up in that very strict religious atmosphere, if you can call it religion.
What religion was?
Oh, predominantly Protestant. 100% Protestant.
Are you talking about the school
Baptist,
or your
Methodist,
home?
Methodist, Presbyterian. We were Methodists.
But and did the school have the same atmosphere?
Yes. It was just simply an extension of the home and community. I remember that some reading was taboo, and it appeals to my sense of humor even yet. Huckleberry Finn was on the no-no list.
It still is in some places.
I read it at night under the bed covers in the dormitory.
And was it as exciting as you had anticipated?
It was. It was. I read. I spent my life reading. One thing that had a real impact, we subscribed to some magazines and newspapers. They were weekly or tri-weekly papers. The Commercial Appeal in Memphis and the Atlanta Journal, the Atlanta Constitution, and I read those papers. My father was not a book reader, but he read the newspapers constantly.
Had he gone to college?
No. No. Very few people in that community had gone to college. Mm-hmm. It was unusual, really.
What about your interest in writing? Did that develop in school in your younger years?
I suppose it did. My mother was an imaginative woman, and I had maybe an inborn curiosity. I really can't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested in writing in high school to this extent that I undertook to organize a student newspaper. We had no money, had no facilities. And we did actually publish some things in the little county weekly newspaper. And I think I remember, I'm not real sure that I'm accurate about this, I think we got out once or twice a little published sheet of school news. Must have been pretty elementary, whatever it was. I had the bug, and it's hard to say just when and where you picked up that bug.
You went to high school. You talked about going away to school. How far was it away from home?
Oh, about 25 miles.
And you boarded there?
Yes.
How often would you go home?
About every 3 months, 3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. It was difficult to go. The roads were very muddy and difficult to travel on.
Transportation.
And I had to change trains. Even that 25 miles, rode up to a little town 12 miles away, and then had to change trains.
Did your brothers and sisters go to the same school?
Yes, my brothers did. My sisters went to the county high school in our home county. I went out of my home county.
Was this something that was an option at the time, that you could stay or go out of the county?
Yes, you could. And my going out of the county was somewhat fortuitous.
Mm. Why was that?
I spent from my 16th birthday on, right after the World War I ended, the boll weevil hit that part of the South hard, almost bankrupted the cotton farmer from Texas up through Alabama. And those years right after World War I, the boll weevil was a severe menace. And the farmers had not made a transition over to other types of field crops or diversified farming. And everybody, it was in the same boat. And I got a job on my 16th birthday on a dredge boat. And I spent 2 years on that boat.
Where did it go?
We were digging a canal in the headwaters of the Pearl River, a drainage canal.
Mm-hmm.
And I got sick and tired of that mud and grease and that dredge jerking around. And a boy had brought some books on board that boat. And I got excited at those books. And I decided that was not the life for me. I wasn't going to spend my life among water moccasins and mud and drilling miles of holes in that roaring dredging machine. I went to Mississippi, what's now Mississippi State University, thinking that they had a preparatory school. They did have, but they discontinued it. And they would not admit me, obviously, to the state college. And I learned about this school. It was on the same little railroad, and I went there and was admitted.
What was that?
Admitted on Friday, Choctaw County Agricultural High School at Ware, Mississippi, W-E-I-R. I was admitted on Friday. I went back to my home and got ready on Sunday, went to that school. I think they never asked me how much schooling I'd had. That never entered into any consideration. I was weighed around 190 pounds at that time. And of course, on that dredge, I developed into a pretty strong lad. They were interested in my playing football. And I did. 4 years I played football. Mm-hmm. On that, I went entered school on Monday, played football on Friday against a team from Kosciuszko, Mississippi, a much larger town, and a school that should have had a much better team. We won that game. We didn't win them all, but we won a fair share of them.
Did you play football all the way through high school then?
All the way through high school. Played at the position of guard, right guard, and center. When they needed a substitute center, I played in that position. Mm. I can hardly think of that now, but I did play 4 years.
Then what happened?
I did not want to go to Mississippi State. At that time it was called Mississippi A&M College. I was not interested in agriculture or engineering either. I wasn't good in mathematics. And I had my fill of agriculture. As a matter of fact, that school required me to take 4 years of agriculture. It was a potentially a training ground to turn farm boys and girls back on the land. There was nothing back on the land for me because the boll weevil had taken care of that. And being a southern boy, small southern rural community or town, there were only about three professions opened. One was law, the other medicine, and maybe by a wild stretch of the imagination, an engineer came along once in a while. But that was not a flourishing profession. And I chose to study law. And there was only one school really open for that, and that was the University of Mississippi, Ole Miss. And I entered the university in the fall of 1925, thinking I was going to law school, but I never got near the law school. I met a very interesting man, a man who used to have a tremendous personal influence in my life, Charles S. Sidner. I never had but one course under him, and it had very little to do with my interest in history, almost nothing.
What was the course, do you remember?
In British history. Mm-hmm. But I had numerous conversations with him. He was a young professor, just out of Johns Hopkins, and he was on the rise as a young professor. And I turned to history. I did not have a lot of history at the University of Mississippi. But I came away with the interest.
How did you develop that relationship with him?
More or less accidentally. I saw this young professor in the hall of that old Lyceum building there, which had been so prominent in national and international news. And I began talking to him. I just developed a friendship, which endured to the end of his life, an intimate friendship. I was going to lunch here with the dean of the graduate school, and he said, "Did you know Charlie Sidner had died?" And I didn't.
That was here at UK.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And I was quite shocked about that. I immediately learned that he had died in Gulfport, Mississippi. At that time, he was a professor of history, head of the history department at Duke University, and was dean of the graduate school at Duke. He'd gone down to Mississippi to make a speech, and had died, and was buried in Chattanooga. The next day, I got a letter from him, which shocked me mightily.
Yes.
I had the good fortune, and I learned something that stayed with me all my life. I had another professor in freshman English, a man named Hudson, Arthur Palmer Hudson, came from precisely the same background I had, and pretty close to my home community. He was a very difficult professor. He was rigid rather than difficult. He took those Mississippi boys and girls who had poor high school backgrounds. He had had a poor background himself, and he drilled hard on them, correcting their speech, their writing, their intellectual development. Students undertook to dodge his courses because they thought he was bloodless. Well, I had to take his freshman English. And he did something that taught me a lesson that I used in my own teaching. He required us to write a paragraph, a daily paragraph, on something. That challenged your imagination.
Did he
come up for a college boy to see something that would he could write a paragraph about?
This was anything you chose, any student chose to write about?
Anything you saw or anything crossed your mind, whatever. Write a paragraph about it. And I did. And I wish I had it now. I turned in a paragraph every day. And a lot of them are published. I have in my desk drawer back here those things that were published. He published a weekly sheet called a Freshman Theme Review, in which the better ones were published and the poorer ones were published.
Were they pointed out as the better ones and the poorer ones?
And the poorer ones.
Oh, dear. Yes.
And thank God I never got one in the poor ones.
I don't think that would go over too well today.
Well, there were a lot of poor ones published, and they were horrible. Must have been quite shocking to the people.
Well, did the poorer ones get inspired by that to correct themselves, or did they just decide
they
to drop out of English altogether?
I simply don't know. But I do know in my case that that was a real stimulus. I also, right from the start, became a reporter on the college paper. And I remained a reporter until I left Ole Miss. I was associate editor of the college paper, and that was a wonderful experience. That gave me an opportunity to. As a matter of fact, that almost led to a course in my life. In the latter part of my days on that paper, I reported on the chancellor's office, and I got to know the chancellor. Excuse me. And one day I walked across the campus and met him, and he said, "I've been looking for you." He said, "I've been to a meeting, evidently of the Southern Association of Colleges and Secondary Schools, and I met Dr. Frank McVeigh, president of the University of Kentucky, and he asked me to have one of our boys make application for a scholarship." And he said, "I want you to make application for that." And I did, and got that little $200 scholarship here. But by the time I came here...
Was this for graduate school?
Yes.
I see.
But I went 3 years to the University of Mississippi. And then I lacked a quarter of having my work completed for my AB degree. And they permitted me a very unusual thing. They permitted me to go to the University of Virginia and finish work for my AB degree. And so, I came here from the University of Virginia.
So it was AB degree that you got, but you got your credits transferred to the University of Virginia?
No, I'm a graduate of Ole Miss, University of Mississippi.
So the Virginia credits were transferred to Mississippi instead of the other way around.
That's right. That's right.
And why did you go to Virginia?
I had an uncle who was on the staff at the university, my mother's brother. He was superintendent of schools in Albemarle County. And he didn't think I was getting a good education at Ole Miss. And he wanted me to come to Virginia. And I'll have to do a little bragging here. He didn't think I could do the work at the University of Virginia. He had a supercilious notion about Mississippi and Mississippians, despite the fact he'd come up, grown up there. And I went to work. I had a double challenge. One is not to let my university down. Mm-hmm. And the other is not to let my uncle down. But most of all, not to let me down.
Right.
And when I got my final grades, he went with me. And I was uncertain about what kind of a record I had. And I knew that if I had a poor record, then I was going to get a stern lecture. But I have an all-A record from Virginia. And that startled him.
Great.
And he offered to send me to medical school. If I'd go to medical school, he'd pay all my expenses. And we were walking down that colonnade there on the lawn at Virginia when he did that. And I said, "No, I'm positively not medical school material. I have no interest whatsoever in studying medicine. I'd make a miserable doctor." I came here and got a little more vision of what the field of history is. I certainly, when I came here, I was committed to going on in the field of history. But when I got off the train down here on September the 14th, 1928, I had no idea what was going to become of me or where my life might wind up. And the porter on the train had. But I did get a glimmer of the future in history. Several vistas. Number one, I concentrated strictly in the field of history. And that cultivated a further interest. The second thing, I became aware, at least, of the literature in the field of history. I became aware of what it meant to do research in history. And I became aware also of some of the personalities in the profession of history. Some of the old lads who were the great men of that time. I look back on it, I heard James A. Breasted, the famous Egyptologist of Chicago, deliver his presidential address that December. Well, that is the thing that I didn't know how significant that would appear to me later on, but I look back on it and think what a wonderful opportunity that was. I was present at the American Historical Association when a panel discussed Ulrich Phillips' the slavery, the central theme in Southern history. I sat just barely in front of him where I could see him and heard his reply to that discussion. And that was a monumental moment in history. And to see Phillips that later, and I talked with him, and he gave me some advice about my master's thesis.
What was
what sources to look into and where I might go with it.
What was your thesis?
My thesis was livestock in trade in livestock, slaves, and hemp between Kentucky and the lower South. And that was in Phillips' area of interest. I met other people there who later on, some of them I came to know fairly well. Some of them I came to know very well indeed. But a young boy who'd never been north of the Ohio River and who was just beginning to get into the profession of history, that was a marvelous opportunity. Later on, I used to see young graduate students come along, and I never forgot the moment when I stood in their same shoes and could appreciate what they were seeing. Fortunately, the American Historical Association at that time was relatively small, and I could meet people there. I remember hearing a professor at the University of Iowa, a group of them discussing their economic situation. And one of them, the professor from the University of Iowa, said his salary was so low and he was living in a house so small that he had to go outdoors to put his britches on. Well, that was an encouraging fact about going into the profession.
Some things haven't changed.
Once I got through that year, I was committed to the profession. Then I think life is made up of a great many fortuitous circumstances. In doing that research, I had got myself familiar in an elementary way, I suppose, a cursory way, with the resources for historical research in this region. I went home. I had not graduated from the University of Mississippi. I graduated here one day with a master's degree. I got on the train and rode to Oxford, Mississippi, and got there just as the commencement line was going. I was the last man on the totem pole going into the chapel. And I got my AB degree. I didn't spend much more than a couple of hours on the campus of the University of Mississippi on that trip. I went home not knowing precisely what I was going to do that summer. I thought, as the train pulled out down this water street, a Vine Street here in Lexington, if I ever see this place again, it'll be too soon. I was not real happy here that first year. I found the Kentuckians rather difficult. I'd come from a very friendly, free and easy southern atmosphere into this mixture of bluegrass snobbery and mountain reticence. And I couldn't quite reconcile myself with either. I got a telegram asking me to come back to make a calendar or a catalog of research materials within easy, accessible distance of the university. And I spent that summer doing that.
Back in Lexington?
Yes. I did know, I should add, I did know, I had made application for entry to graduate school. I did know I was going to go somewhere for my doctorate. By the time I left here, I knew definitely where I would go. I got some tuition grants. I've really forgotten. Wisconsin, I think, was one of the places. I got a grant from University of Missouri, I believe it was one. And I got an offer of a very good assistantship at Vanderbilt University. But the letters I got from down there were so confused and just had an element that called me to be suspicious. And I look back on it now and wonder how I did realize that. I found out that I was corresponding with a very famous old Southern historian who at that time, mine was wandering into the Never Never Land. And I didn't accept that grant. I got a fellowship at Duke University and went to Duke. I went to Duke University, well, let me come back just for a moment to that experience here during the summer of 1929. I became familiar with the resources in the State Library and the State Historical Society Library, Transylvania, and over at Georgetown, and one in the Lexington Public Library, and some of the other resources. In that round, I discovered that Center College had a magnificent set of the serial set of the federal documents and publications, thing that was to benefit the University of Kentucky in the future greatly. I did not know anything about Duke University except just what I had read in the newspapers. I remember quite distinctly in a course in education at the University of Mississippi, the old professor mentioned the fact that a rich man had endowed a school in North Carolina to be called Duke University. That was almost all I knew about Duke University. I made an application there without knowing anything about professors or anything. And I entered there in September of 1929. They had produced up to that point only one PhD, a man named Ralph Flanders, who spent his life in New York University. What's that called? New York City University? Anyway.
I don't know if it was NYU, New York University.
At New York University. He spent his life, his whole career there. I entered Duke University in those very, very interesting transitional years when it was growing out of being a small religious Methodist school, Trinity College, and trying to become a major university.